Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Austin. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, destruction of our home, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So in the last you heard from us, was the episode titled Bets in Exile, where I briefly told you that we were going on an unexpected hiatus from the show and mentioned it was because of our house being damaged with a water leak. So we are still not back in our home, as you could probably tell from the sound quality. We are recording in our temporary rental house. We'll get more on that in a bit. How's it going, Melanie?
It's going.
So we are managing to keep our senses of humor.
Mostly.
We are all dealing with the stress for better and worse, you know, whatever. So let's kind of recap what happened.
Okay.
So there was a water leak. There was, in fact, two leaks, but I won't go into the details because it's boring.
So it started as like, the floor feels kind of wet here in the hallway.
It was actually, the floor feels kind of squishy. That was
squishy,
the first thing.
Squishy.
We had a floating wood floor, like the pergo is what it's called. And there was an underlayment, and the underlayment was wet.
Very wet.
And then it got more wet.
And then the water started seeping up between the floorboards.
And the floorboards started curling.
Yeah. And then there was puddles on top of the floorboards.
Yes.
And then it started seeping into the bedrooms under the carpets.
Right.
And the carpet started squishing.
Right. And so the problem is, well, again, I don't want to get into too much detail because it's kind of boring, but there were two leaks. It turned out that there were two leaks. There was a leak. There was a broken drain under the tub, which was what distracted us from the major leak, which was a leak in a supply line going to the underneath the sink somewhere. Our house is on a slab. All of the water lines run through the concrete because it was built 7 years ago, and that's what they did. And so if there's a leak, you can't find it. And so you either have to jackhammer the floor or replumb the entire house, which is where we're at now, where all of our carpets and floors have been torn out. There's mold being remediated now by a contractor. All of the walls have been cut. Many of the walls, not the entire house, but many of the walls have been cut 2 feet up. So there's no wall there. And they're jackhammering our bathroom today to get at the drain pipe.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting a new bathroom apparently. And the big part of it is while insurance will pay for water damage repair, it will not pay for plumbing repair because it considers plumbing problems, plumbing leaks to be wear and tear.
Right.
So I got our estimate today from the plumber we're probably going to end up going with, because finding any plumber who's available to actually give you an estimate is crazy right now. But it looks like it's going to cost $12,000 to do the plumbing. That's just to do the plumbing.
Right.
All right. So that's the problem.
It's been, yeah. So one of the first things we did was we got a pod.
We rented one of those pods that you can put in your driveway. It's like a small freight container.
Storage container.
Yeah.
So we put all of our stuff from all of the water damaged rooms into the pod.
Which is basically three bedrooms, dining room, living room, and bathroom. So the only things that didn't go into the pod were the kitchen, the laundry room pantry, and my office. So we had to do it pretty quick.
Yes.
It was
like a week.
Yeah, we had a week, like over a weekend and then a week. And we moved into a hotel. Like, it was Friday. Thursday, we didn't know we were even going to leave the house. Friday, we was like, oh, we need to leave. We can't stay here. This isn't a patch the pipe and things are going to, or things are fixed. That's when we realized the extent of the problem and we had to get a hotel.
Right. When we started to realize that there was a, we had to turn off the water because the leak was continuing as long as the house water was on.
Right.
And B, we realized there was mold and it was starting to affect our breathing.
Right. And then we didn't want to get deadly mold that would condemn the house. So we got a hotel, two hotel rooms. We moved into there, and over the next several days, with the help of friends who came by, we packed up.
Yeah. Thank goodness for the scouts and the homeschoolers, because
yes,
those two communities of friends pitched in and were wonderful.
They showed up. Yeah.
They showed up. I mean, some of my homeschooling friends who we haven't seen in a couple of years showed up and spent days helping us pack.
Right.
And that was really amazing.
So, and then the, and because the unexpected expenses of some friends set up a GoFundMe for us, which has been funded very well. And I thought, oh, that's going to be plenty. It'll cover it. Now I'm wondering if even that will cover all of the expenses. It's kind of scary looking at it. But so that's been very gratifying. So we moved into a hotel, Holiday Inn Express.
It was a very nice hotel. I was really afraid when we were going to move into a hotel that it would be scary.
Like a dumpy motel.
We've stayed in some places that were pretty not nice.
I specifically avoided the Motel 6. This is a brand new Holiday Inn Express, the next town over from ours, which was very convenient. It would have been nice if both rooms were even on the same floor. They weren't.
Yeah, we had to put the teens into their own room.
Yeah, the girls all were in their own room and the boys were in a room with us. Technically, we violated the rules. There's supposed to be an adult in each room, but we sternly warned them, don't open the door for anyone without looking to the people, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it was nice. The hotel had a pool that Lucy took advantage of. She went swimming one night.
Yeah.
It had free breakfast, a free hot breakfast, which was institutional food, but
the kids were all pretty happy to be able to get muffins and pancakes. And
they had a pancake robot. That thing was awesome.
And cinnamon rolls and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and bacon several days. So
yeah,
it was nice to have a hot breakfast, you know, for us.
Yeah, the kids were by and large a little bit too overwhelmed to take advantage of the pool or anything else.
Yes, it was overwhelming. And then being in a hotel where you can't, like, we would take them to the house and they would either help pack, or they were often overwhelmed by that. They just spent the day running around outside.
Right. Or sitting in the car or reading books.
So, yeah, that was the top. And then so the next step was so the insurance paid for the hotel for a week. But we knew that wasn't a long term solution. So a friend stepped forward and offered his family's vacation house on Cape Cod. In the town of Harwich, in which we could
generously let us stay there. They said for a couple of weeks, but we actually spent most of the first week that they had offered still in the hotel because we had to finish packing.
Right, we didn't finish packing until so we got in the hotel on Friday night. We didn't finish packing until that following Thursday, and then so we went down Thursday and were there till the following Sunday, and so it was in Harwich, which is on toward the end of the Cape where it takes a left turn.
The elbow of the Cape.
It's the elbow of the Cape.
Cape Cod looks like a arm making a, you know, Rosie the Riveter fist.
Yes.
And we're at the elbow.
Yes. It looks like a flexing arm. So beautiful.
It was really, really nice.
Big vacation house.
It was so very nice because we were so exhausted and overwhelmed and just emotionally wrung out to have a nice retreat to go to for a week. We treated it like a vacation and we went to the beach just about every day. I think there were a couple days when it rained.
A different beach every day.
A different beach every day.
There were 2 days that it rained, but other than that, it was gorgeous, amazing weather.
And so we just let the kids like slack off of school for the second week in a row, because while we were moving things out, we were not doing schoolwork.
Right.
And just kind of enjoyed the break.
So It was an hour and a half from our house, and I had to drive back and forth several times to do recordings that I couldn't, put off, and to meet with, the contractor and that sort of thing. Excuse me. So it was a long drive back and forth, an hour and a half each way. But I didn't have to do it every day. And so it was really, so right down there at that end of the Cape is the Cape Cod National Seashore, which is a national park. And I'd been there before years ago, but I didn't remember how amazing it is. It is incredible.
Yeah, I had not never been to, I think my parents and I drove down the Cape once when I was in grad school.
You went to Provincetown,
they came to visit.
Yeah.
But we just kind of drove down the Cape. We didn't like stop and look at the beaches or really do anything. It was more of just a very quick day trip exploring. Yeah. We didn't really see much.
So we went to Coast Guard Beach. We went to Nauset Beach. We went to Marconi Beach, which is named for the spot where Marconi made the first transatlantic telegraph radio.
Yeah.
Was it telegraph? I can't remember now. Then we were up at Race Point Beach up in Provincetown. And then we went to the Great Island Trail, which was a hike on a beach, but also through a salt marsh.
I really, really wanted to go visit a salt marsh. And the kids were really, really much more interested in going to the beach.
Yes.
And the one time I managed to convince them to do a hike that I wanted to do, everybody got tired and we did like not even a quarter of the hike.
Well, Anthony turned back fairly soon, although he had pains in his knees. He's had growing pains. That kid is shooting up like a weed. But one of the things I loved was that every beach we went to was different.
Right. They weren't, it wasn't just like the same place over and over again.
Yeah. And there was a hurricane far offshore that was causing the big waves, which was nice too.
Yeah. The kids really loved jumping in those. So, and was October, but our kids were still running into the waves and swimming in the water.
Yes. And there were seals swimming there, dozens of them.
That was amazing. The one day we went to Coast Guard Beach, there was just a steady stream of seals swimming past the beach, very close into land.
Although where there are seals, there are sharks. We didn't see any, but that it is known for. There had been shark sightings.
All the beaches entrances had warning signs and first aid kits.
Yeah.
So that if somebody got bitten by a shark, there was a first aid kit to like keep them from bleeding out.
Yeah, that's a little sobering.
Right.
That and coyote warning signs, which a teenager did get bit at one of those beaches just a few days after we were there on the beach. Coyotes. Like coyotes at the beach. Like sharks I get. But yeah, anyway. And then
we did not see either coyotes or sharks, which is a little bit disappointing to me.
To see a shark.
I wanted to see the coyotes and the sharks.
Yeah. Well, we got coyotes in our neighborhood at home, so
I've never seen one of them in there either.
Yeah. There was actually someone on the, the Neighbors app just the other night was saying that there was coyotes on Weymouth Street. So right down the street from
us. Around the corner from
us. So, wow. So we were there for a week. On the Cape, anything else about the Cape that we went into Provincetown, just drove through. We didn't stop anywhere.
I mean, it was basically like hang out at the house and go to the beach. And those are the two things that we did.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of, sort of normal life hanging out at the house, like laundry and dishes and cooking dinners, because none of those things go away just because you're on vacation.
Yeah, when moms are on vacation, they still cook and clean and do laundry.
And especially like lots of trying to keep things clean, because of course we were very conscious that this was a house. Had been loaned to us and wanting to make sure we left it in as pristine condition as we found it.
Yes. So from there, that was two weeks. That we'd been out of our home. And so we knew where we had to. And we, unfortunately, there was someone coming into the house the following week, so we couldn't stay there. And so insurance wanted to put us up in another hotel.
A residence inn.
Yeah. So basically two room suites. A suite that has a living room / mini kitchen and a bedroom. Two of those for seven people.
I was really, really, really dreading the idea of all seven of us in four rooms for a month or more.
Yeah.
Especially without a full kitchen. Like, each of them had, like, a little two-burner stove and a small fridge and a small sink. But you're expected
to make dinner for seven people on it.
Well, right. I mean, you could make a dinner for, like, the two people that you expect to be sleeping in the suite, or maybe four. But seven people kind of requires a little bit more space, unless you're just...
Right.
Like, there wasn't even an oven to, like, heat up frozen pizzas or anything.
There was a microwave. There was a microwave
and two burners on a stove.
Right. So I counter-proposed, and those were like each $300 a night. And they were going to give it to us for a month till November 7th, and then with a possible extension to December 7th. So I counter-proposed that they let me look for a place on Airbnb or Vrbo that would be about the same amount per night. Not $600, because that's what they were paying. Well, they probably weren't paying the regular room rate. They probably got some corporate discount. But they certainly weren't paying $300 a night for both suites. So I found a house in Plymouth, Mass. For $300 a night. And they went for it. They let us rent that for a month. We rented it. They reimbursed us. We've already got the check for that, thankfully. And that's where we are now.
Yep.
And because it's a Vrbo... It's, you know, there's nothing, all those things are in vacation areas. So it's kind of a vacation house. So we're near the beach again.
Right. Yeah, it's about 2.5-3 blocks from the beach.
Yeah, we're about a quarter mile from the beach. You can see the water from where we are.
Yeah. And it's a really nice house. I mean, it's set up as a vacation house with lots of like beach themed artwork. But it's nice. It's got a kitchen and it's got room enough for everyone's got a bed. Nobody's sleeping on the floor.
Had to be big enough to sleep seven people. There's a full empty basement that had giant Lego bins in it.
That was one of the great blessings was realizing after we'd moved in that there were in fact Legos in the basement and a basement for the kids to run around in, which was...
They'd had 2 weeks of Lego withdrawals.
Yeah, they were really, like, missing their Legos, and Ben was very sad. And I had told them that maybe we could look into buying some Legos for them, like a small set that they could play with in whatever rental house we ended up in.
And it turned out that they actually bought the Lego sets with their own money anyway, but there was all those Legos that were down there already, which was good. So we're near Whitehorse Beach in Plymouth, if you're local and you know where that is. And it's 45 minutes from our house, and so I can get back to our house fairly quickly. I mean, it's half the distance from what it was last week. So I have a commute again for a couple days a week, which is weird. But the beach is like, it's just down the street. You can go out and you can walk down to it, which is really nice. And
yeah, we've slowly this week, we took a week of just settling into the house. And then this week we've, as of today,
started trying to do school again.
And it's hard. They don't want to do school. They're discombobulated and
they're stressed. Disrupted. They're out of sorts. It's not their home.
It's not the right place.
And they haven't been home for 3 weeks. I mean, it's a great adventure at first, but after a while it becomes, okay, I want to go home now.
There have been lots of tears, lots of homesickness.
Yeah.
But we're trying to get back into something resembling a routine so that we can not get too far behind. Mm.
The other thing that's been a blessing is, we spoke about scouts earlier, is that while the kids aren't able to go to their scout meetings because they are too far away, the three older ones have had scout camping trips, the one while we were at the hotel, and then one just this past weekend that was actually in the same town that we're in Plymouth. And that they were able to go to. And so that was nice that they could continue to be involved in scouts.
Yeah, I think it was they had sort of mixed feelings about it.
Yeah.
They both wanted to go, but also it was more stressful than a camping trip usually is. There's a little bit of homesickness kicked in.
Overwhelmed a little bit, a little tired. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but
I have a feeling they weren't quite pulling their weight in camp in terms of like meal prep and cleanup and cooking and stuff.
Yeah. The scoutmaster kind of mentioned that they were a little stressed the whole time. So, but they were able to do that, and they were able to participate somewhat in their scout, like the girls were able to participate in their scout meetings via Zoom or Google Meet. So that's been good. Ben, not so much. I wish they would allow him to participate via that somehow with his. That would be nice.
Yeah, I don't think the
they're not really
the boys aren't as high tech.
Yeah, which is funny. So there was that in school. As far as how my work is going, you know, I go back for some recordings. I've been keeping up with Secrets of Doctor Who and Secrets of Star Trek and Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. I've turned over the reins for Secrets of Tech to my co-hosts there. They've been ably managing that. And there's a raising the bets. And then the other stuff, I've got a laptop and I bought a monitor, and I've been editing wherever we are on the very slow uploading internet that we have here at the vacation house. I miss my internet access at home. That's going on. So that has actually been pretty good. So the future is we have this house until November 7th. I don't expect that we will be able to move home by then. We will.
I think November 7th was extremely optimistic.
Yes. So we will probably need at least a couple more weeks. Hopefully we can extend here.
Rather than having to move
to yet another place. Yeah. We basically moved half of our kitchen and stuff here.
I'm a little bit worried about when we have to leave, because I think that we might have more than fits in both of the cars.
There was still room in both cars when we came here. So, we may have to make more than one trip. Hopefully we won't have to go too far to the next place if we had to move out of here. I really hope we could just stay here for a couple more weeks. And then, you know, hopefully I can tomorrow give the plumber the okay on the go ahead on the job, schedule it, get him in there, get the plumbing fixed so that we can get the contractor to do all the other stuff that needs to be done and get back in our home. Yeah. I don't know if we'll be home by Thanksgiving. Probably not. I think we're going to be having Thanksgiving in Plymouth, which was sort of appropriate.
Yeah, there's that. First Thanksgiving and all that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, let's talk about we talk about cooking and eating, on our podcast. So how's been the food situation?
I mean, for the first week when we were in the hotel, we had no water, running water in our house. So there was no cooking at all.
Right. We ate out every meal.
And, you know, it sounds like really nice, like, oh, we can just eat out. And it's not, because you've got kids who are cranky and discombobulated and just want to be at home.
It's not like vacation, even, eating out on vacation. Yeah.
And they're picky and they're tired and nobody can agree on a restaurant, much less than once we're in a restaurant, like decide what they want off the menu. And it was just, it was tiring.
There was one place we went that everyone was happy. And that was the place in Harwich, Brax's Landing.
Yeah.
That everyone enjoyed that. That was probably the most expensive of the meals. But
yeah, that was our splurge.
Although we did go to a cafe when we got here to Plymouth too that first night, and that was really good too.
Yeah. The eating out at restaurants, I'm glad that phase is over, because it was exhausting.
Yeah.
Cooking in other people's homes is always really weird, because you're like, you spend a lot of mental energy trying to make do, like, at home, you know exactly if you're making a particular dish, you know which pan, which spatula, which spoon, where everything is.
You've carefully acquired the tools that you want to use and the tools that you need.
Right. So it's kind of like, well, okay, if I want to make beef stroganoff, I have to find a pot that's big enough to like make the beef in. And I also have to find a pot that's big enough to boil the noodles in. And where do they keep the
this tool or that tool? We actually brought our big Dutch oven.
Yeah. I kind of enjoy the creativity of having to make do to a certain extent. It's kind of a challenge, which when I'm not too tired is kind of fun. But after a while, even the challenge gets a little bit
right
overwhelming. But it's nice to have home-cooked meals and the familiarity of familiar dishes. We've been going back to a lot of our old favorite standbys because I think that one thing that anchors you when you're feeling discombobulated is food and familiar food, like mm-hmm. home-cooked, mom-cooked, our favorite meals. And so we've been I've been trying to stick to things like that they know and like.
Stroganoff, curry, burgers and dogs, sausages, pasta.
Pork chops.
Right. Just the standards that we can rely on that we know most of them like and will enjoy.
I think one of the things that they're missing most is like home baked goods.
Right. Because
I do quite a bit of baking and like Lucy said, oh, I just want a muffin for breakfast. She does not like store-bought muffins. She only likes homemade muffins. And so,
spoiled.
Yeah, very spoiled. So there's that, but at least
we're eating decent meals. We're not eating out all the time. So
and not eating junk food.
Right. There was that one night where we had McDonald's on the way to the scouts camping, but that was mainly because of the timing and getting them to their camp.
Right, because they had to be there fairly early in there to eat before we left. They would have been eating before they were hungry, and then they would have been hungry when they got to camp. So right. We figured stopping halfway there and having a meal seemed like the better option.
Right. So yeah, so that's where we are with cooking. Hopefully, we'll have more interesting stuff to talk about food, more specifics when we talk about. You did make that zucchini dish. So we had our garden has been long dead. I mean, it's October by now. The garden is long dead, except for our basil had been persisting.
Our basil thrived this year.
We had Thai basil and Italian basil. And so last time we were at the house, which was, Saturday, I harvested all of the basil, just a big bag of it. And I used some of it to make a Taiwanese chicken dish called three-cup chicken, which uses 3 cups of basil. And then you used some to make a zucchini tomato dish.
Yeah, just really simple saute onions and garlic and then throw in your zucchini and tomatoes. I use a lot of red pepper flakes, so it was a pretty spicy zucchini because only you and I really eat zucchini anyway.
Right.
The kids will not touch it. I don't know what I did wrong, but my kids do not like zucchini.
Yeah, I didn't like it when I was a kid.
Unless it's in zucchini bread.
Yeah.
I guess it's the texture. I don't know. So it was spicy. I put a lot of red pepper flakes in, and then I think about a cup of basil for like two zucchini.
Yeah, it was a lot of basil.
It was like good. Two zucchini and two tomatoes and a cup of basil. It was a lot more basil than I would have used at home because we just had so much of it that was harvested needing to not go to waste.
Mm-hmm.
And man, it was really good.
It was really good.
I should be more generous with the basil more often because it really made a huge difference.
You know what else we've discovered is that Taijin seasoning, which is a Mexican seasoning.
Right.
It's a Mexican pepper spice. It's a lemony. Limey pepper spice.
It's like lime and
red pepper flakes.
Red chili flakes.
Yeah, it was at the house in Harwich, and we tried it, and it was so good, I actually bought some online.
Yeah, the fun thing about cooking in other people's kitchens is other people's spice cabinets,
mm-hmm.
And saying, what does this taste like? So one of the first things I do when I move into a kitchen is like poke through the spice cabinets, look and taste different things that I like, spice blends that I don't know what they are.
That's from good. So that and the adobo, which I need to get some of because that's a nice substitute for the onion powder, which we're lacking. Anyway, that's what we've been cooking. Well, I'm sure we'll have more. So let's talk about, we have been reading and watching a lot. So probably
I have read so many books that I'm dying to talk about. I got on like a real great book reading streak. I found a list of science fiction and fantasy books, like the best of the past decade. And there have been a lot of winners on that list.
Okay. We will dedicate a lot of time in our next episode.
Okay.
Because now that we've talked about all the stuff that's been going on, we can dedicate more time to talking about books because I want to talk about that with you. But let's talk about the two things that you and I both did together. So we both read The Last Graduate, which was the second book in the Scholomance trilogy by Naomi Novik.
The first book being Deadly Education.
Deadly Education, which we both agree have been two of the best books we've read in a while.
Yes, very good.
Yeah, and then we'll talk about the movie we watched, Black Widow. We watched that as well. But let's talk about The Last Graduate. You read that, what, in a night?
Two nights.
It took me a little longer, like a week, to read it.
yeah, so I had good. Time to kill.
I think you briefly mentioned this in the one of the more recent episodes.
Did I?
Did we get it after we were
on? No, I thought we got it out. I got after it when we were staying in the hotel was when I downloaded it.
Or maybe you mentioned that it was coming out.
I was anticipating
it. Yeah. So to recap what it's about, it imagines a magical school, not quite like Harry Potter.
Not like Hogwarts.
In this world that she imagines, wizards are endangered by Maleficaria, which are magical creatures.
It's sort of like taking J.K. Rowling's Fantastic Beasts and making them dialing the dark up several notches.
Mm.
Like, and Hogwarts. Like, Hogwarts has elements of danger in it. It's what makes it kind of spicy and thrilling.
Yeah, but somewhat unrealistic, because if it were that dangerous, the kids would die a lot more.
So Naomi Novik kind of, I think, in the Scholomance trilogy, she imagines a really, truly deadly education, a dangerous school where students die in vast numbers.
Like a third of the students or a quarter of them die before even reaching senior year.
Right.
And that's acceptable because kids who don't go to the school and learn how to defend themselves, they have a 10% survival rate.
Right. Your survival rate is actually boosted by going to school, because the school is actually a safer place than home, than anywhere else in the world.
It teaches you through hard-won experience how to survive against the magical creatures that want to feed on your magical energy.
One of the interesting things about the Scholomance series is that there are no teachers. There's no Albus Dumbledore or Snape or McGonagall.
Mm-hmm.
The school itself is semi-sentient, and the assignments just like appear on your desk, and then you like have a place in the classroom where you turn them in, and your like school assignments just like sort of appear.
And there's a sort of twisted logic to how you get assigned different classes, and intent, it plays a big role in magic.
And if you accidentally look at something in a particular language, then the school will decide that you're learning that language, and now you have to like race to keep up with a whole nother language that you now are responsible for writing papers in.
Right. All the while, you know, trying to avoid being eaten or consumed by an evil creature or another student trying to kill you and suck all your magical energy out for their survival.
It's a very Darwinian survival of the fittest.
Hmm. And yet, it's not so dark. I mean, it makes it sound very dark and
right. The ironic thing is that having this really dark backdrop, what you have is a protagonist who is.
She sees herself as a dark wizard in training, but who is in reality. I don't want to spoil too much. She's not quite what she thinks she is.
She's very spunky. She's very likable, even though she's also not likable in a paradoxical way.
Sometimes you want to smack her upside the head.
But I found her strangely endearing.
Hmm.
I really enjoyed going on the ride. The story basically plops you in the middle of the events, and you don't really know what's going on, and you get little bits and pieces of the what the universe is like
narrative,
flashbacks, and narrative
exposition.
Asides.
Yeah, I dare say this is better than Harry Potter.
Oh, I think it's much better than Harry Potter. I think it's better, tighter world building, and this has always been my gripe about Harry Potter. Harry Potter is a fun carnival ride, but you don't look too closely at the seams because the world is a lot of cardboard cutouts that are sort of backdrops to the action, but it doesn't really bear much scrutiny. Right. Whereas Naomi Novik is a very careful world builder, and what she's really interested in, I think, is the way the world shapes the characters rather than the world being a backdrop to the characters.
Every book she writes is better than the last one. I am like so looking forward to what she's got. Like, she wrote the Temeraire series, which I thought was really good. But then she wrote Uprooted, Spinning Silver, and now this. And like, each one has been better than the last. It is really fascinating to see her develop. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a third book coming out next year, I presume, which should...
Right. I did think that Last Graduate felt very much at times the middle book of a trilogy.
All middle books of trilogies are...
Yes.
Yeah. Even Two Towers?
It was satisfying, but it left you on a definite cliffhanger wanting more.
Oh, yeah. I was mad. Like, no! Why you can't leave us there? So, I mean, I have a feeling I know a general idea of where she's going, but she kind of left us there. So Last Graduate. So check it out. If you haven't read any of them yet, get Deadly Education first. Read that, then read Last Graduate. You will not regret it. Then you and I both watched Black Widow, which was the Marvel movie that concerned the spoilers for a movie that's been out for a few years, a character who's already dead.
Right.
Which is interesting. It's not exactly an origin story, although there's a little bit of her origin in it.
It's kind of an origin story.
Kind of, but that's only the very beginning of the movie. Like, shows her as a child.
But I think actually the very beginning shows, like, dumps you into her childhood and doesn't really, there's almost no exposition at all.
That was actually, if there's a criticism, that the first half hour was confusing unless you really know the character.
But the rest of the movie fills in the exposition in a way that really worked for me. And so I felt like, in a way, it is an origin story because making sense of that first half hour happens throughout the whole film.
Right.
It kind of fills in the gaps. And
there are twists and turns and whatnot.
Right. It's a family story, though. It's a story about belonging to a family and finding the place where you belong in the world.
Which is what all the Marvel movies have been about.
Right. And that's why I really like the Marvel movies, because at heart, they're not about superpowers, superheroes, and supervillains. That's sort of the scaffolding on which they're telling stories about family.
A family, identity, who am I, where do I belong?
Right. And that was really powerful. I really, really... Black Widow has been sort of a loner who finds a family in the Avengers. But she still kind of has that loner mystique quality to her.
Right. But she comes from a family as well. A dysfunctional family.
Right. And that was fascinating to me. I really loved the way they built her background into a story about belonging.
Mm-hmm.
And it really made her character feel so much more rounded. I know a lot of people didn't like the movie, but...
Well, there were elements of the movie that were kind of like, not great. Like the whole, the chemical and the deprogramming thing was all kind of weird. It was thin. Let's put it that way. It was thin. And then the superpowered adversary was kind of like, dropped in there and didn't really, I mean, it had, that character had a purpose and an origin and an explanation, but it didn't feel like
it felt it could have been developed more.
Right. It was like, well, there's this character.
But I think that all that said and done, that was sort of not the point of the story.
Right. Right.
And that's what I liked about it, was that it did something else with the character. If it had just been about the defeating the bad guy, if that had been the whole plot, the whole point of it, it would not have been a very exciting movie.
No.
It would have just been another superhero caper.
It would have been another action movie. Just yeah. No, definitely.
And there was some great mockery. I really, really
self-mockery
about sort of some of the her quirks and
her posing.
Her posing. I really loved the gentle ability to laugh at itself.
The self-referential humor is one of the hallmarks of the Marvel movies.
Yeah, the ability to laugh at yourself, which I think is unfortunately a rare quality today.
The DC superhero movies, most of them, the Batman one and the Superman one, they don't laugh at themselves enough. They don't. What made Wonder Woman good was there were moments where she kind of ticked some air out of the expansiveness, you know what I mean, the of the character, and the same thing with Shazam, and the same thing with some of it, even with Aquaman. Like the Aquaman movie was good because it didn't take itself as seriously as the Dark Knight and Man of Steel and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I like a little bit of ability to kind of wryly look at oneself and say, yeah, I guess I am kind of funny, aren't I?
Right.
Not taking yourself too seriously.
Right. I mean, Ant-Man takes that to the extreme, which is fine, but it's good in that way.
Ant-Man is sort of the
extreme
the bit with the dog from Shakespeare.
right.
It's funny. You need a little bit of lightheartedness, and I kind of like that in the whole scope of the Marvel genre, they devoted some time to the bit with the dog.
Right.
It's funny.
Yeah, that was like, I mean, Thor, as an example, Thor in the first movie was very, you know, spoken archaic English and very serious. Thor Dark World kind of took itself way too seriously. But once you got to Thor,
Ragnarok.
Love and Thunder is the next one. Ragnarok. That might have gone too far in the other direction, perhaps. Some people think it did. He's too unserious.
I don't know. I thought even in the original, there was a little bit of...
There was a little self-referential, you know, poking a few holes in his own grandness.
Yeah. But yeah, I like Thor's kind of over-the-top, bombastic goofiness.
What was it? Mac and Catherine Barron were talking about the What If episode with Thor. That was their least favorite because it was frat boy Thor. And I can see their point. He was a little too dumb in that one.
Right.
The writers took that goofy Thor to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And made him sort of like dumb blonde Thor.
Yeah, but I thought the whole point of the What Ifs was to kind of explore those sides of the character, different sides of the characters.
But without spoiling the What If, I did want to say no one would pick that Thor to be on your top team. Out of all possible Thors, your team to pick to save the universe.
Yeah. He would not be my top pick.
Right. So that was the downside of it.
Yeah. And I'm still on the fence about the whole multiverse thing.
I'm. They've opened a can of worms, and we'll see where they're going to go with it. There were some episodes that were really good, like really good,
right?
Like the Doctor Strange one. But there was other ones that the zombie one I did not like, and the Thor one was just okay. I mean, it was funny in parts, but
I liked the T'Challa.
T'Challa, the Star-Lord.
The Star-Lord, that was really good.
That was good too. Yeah.
Because
It's also the acting from
Chadwick Boseman.
Chadwick Boseman,
yeah,
who was amazing.
So yeah, we've been.
I've been watching some other things too. The new seasons have started a lot of things, including which I will talk about next time, but including Netflix's Another Life or 90210 in space, Melrose Place. But that's for another discussion. Let's wrap up by kind of talking about our experiences of going to Mass in three different parishes. So the first, we haven't been in our home parish in weeks. I didn't even get to go to the last one you guys went to. It's been over a month for me.
Right. We have a new pastor.
Yep.
I haven't actually had a chance to do more than just say hi.
Right. I mean, I know him. I knew him from before.
Right. So it feels kind of weird. We haven't been home. So our first weekend, we ended up going actually to your brother's parish.
Yeah. Where Father
Carlos.
Father Carlos is there. He used to be a parochial vicar at our parish. So it was nice to see him, and he recognized.
I was really bummed that I didn't get a chance to say hi to Father Carlos.
So you weren't able to go to that Mass?
No, I went to the Mass, but we were dealing with a child who was having extreme anxiety issues. So I made it out of the car with said child.
Just before Mass, as Mass began.
Just after Mass began.
Really. Right, that's right.
But your dad also happened to be at that Mass, because that's his parish too.
Yep.
And that was nice. The kids were really so excited to see their grandfather, Nanu.
Yeah.
And
He was up in front, and I was like, we have to rush and go get him before he gets on his scooter and gets out of here.
He scoots out of the way.
Yeah, he's got a scooter that he rides to church.
So that was really nice.
Yes.
And it was nice to go to a parish church where we had at least been there once or twice before.
Right. I mean, like I said, it's my brother's parish. My niece's wedding was there and that sort of thing. So that was nice. So then the next 2 weeks was in Harwich. We went to Mass at Holy Trinity.
Holy Trinity.
Which turns out to be where a friend of a guy I worked for, who's an acquaintance, a friend of my brother's. I worked for him 20 years ago. Yeah, he's buried there, which I didn't know. His funeral was there. But they have an adoration chapel, which is gorgeous. I don't think you got to
see.
I didn't get to go in it, but I saw from outside. It's huge. It's like it's this big adoration chapel. They had a deacon who either had a French Canadian or Portuguese accent. Like, who wasn't quite sure.
My money's on Portuguese.
So the second week we were there, he was giving the homily, and during the petitions, he said, I need to put in a personal petition. My niece died last night. And it was so moving, his prayer for her. And he was so moved. And I think it deeply affected at least some of our kids. I mean, Anthony was specifically praying for him and for her at prayers that night. So,
yeah. Unfortunately, I had to stay home with a sick child, so I didn't get to go to that Mass that week.
This has been a recurring theme where one child has either been sick or too anxious to get to Mass. I mean, this has been, this being displaced from home just makes things worse. So we've been kind of going off back and forth with that. So, which is what happened the next week, where you got to go to St. Bonaventure here in Plymouth with the kids. And I stayed with it wasn't so much anxiety as they were just too exhausted.
Exhausted after camp, after a night camping, two nights camping.
But you got to go.
I went to go. It was really beautiful church. It has very modern, but very bright and white and full of light, sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
And with a beautiful crucifix and kind of a wave motif in metal along the bottom of the screen on which the crucifix is, which was kind of cool. A nice nod to the fact that it's a seaside parish.
Yeah.
The priest's homily was really stunning. It was probably top 10 homilies of the last decade.
Awesome.
It was really good. He did a beautiful exposition of the reading about James and John asking Jesus if they could sit on his right and left hand. And I really liked the way the priest he looked at it in multiple ways. You could look at it this way, or you could look at it this way, or you could look at it this way. And each time he went a little bit deeper and brought it back to sort of personal prayer and reflection about the spiritual life, like his own, and then helping us to apply it to ours too. So he first talked about the first instinctive reaction is, well, that's a really bold ask.
Mm-hmm.
How dare they? Like, there's an audacity to, can we sit at your right?
Right.
That's, right in your left hand.
Yeah. Who do these guys think they are?
Who do they think they are? And he kind of broke it down, though, and he says, well, how often do I do the same thing in my own prayer life? you know, kind of make these audacious requests or demands. We presume on God's goodness in various ways. And sometimes, you know, our prayers are not ideal. But then he kind of talked about, well, at the same time, that audacious ask betrays a real intimacy with Jesus, that they felt close to him. They felt like they were close enough to be able to ask something that bold. And that says that there's a closeness that they felt to him. And so even if their prayer was a little bit off what they should have been asking, they didn't quite understand what they were asking, and Jesus very gently and lovingly corrects them, it tells just something about how close they felt to him.
And a little bit about how Jesus made them feel. I mean, how he consciously, perhaps, opened himself to them.
Right. And so he kind of said, you know, coming back to his own spiritual life, like, yeah, sometimes we don't pray for the things that we should pray for. We don't pray in the right way. We ask for the wrong things of God. And yet, we're still talking to God. We're asking him for things. We're turning to him as our father. Which of us as parents don't have children who sometimes ask for the wrong things?
Oh, yeah.
They presume. They ask for ridiculous things, like big asks that you're like, no, you can't have a pony.
Yes, or, right.
Right, that sort of, you know, they ask, but they ask for these big things because they trust in you. They think of you as being sort of able to do whatever they want.
And frankly, I would rather that than have them be of the mindset where there's no point in asking me for anything because obviously
he doesn't care.
He doesn't care enough.
He's always going to say no.
Right.
And so I really liked the way he kind of delved into the deeper and deeper into our intimacy with God in our spiritual life. And how do we pray and how do we talk to him and how do we ask for things and how do we accept his will for us, especially when his will for us involves suffering? Is it, you know, he says, take up your cross and follow me. He is going to lead us down a path of suffering, and we have to trust that where he's taking us is worth going.
Mm.
And that sort of radical trust in God, but you have to kind of dig through the layers of the gospel to get there. And I really loved that Father was able to really take the time to delve.
Yeah.
Too often, I think priests have one take on a reading, and it's very seldom that I hear somebody who has the time to dig through multiple layers of reactions and meanings and really reflect and ponder.
Hmm.
I liked that.
Good. So that's where we are. Hopefully we'll be giving you regular updates again. I've got the portable recorder. We've got the mindset and the time now. Hopefully that means somewhat regular. We'll see how it goes. But
we're not making any promises.
No promises. We'll do what we can. So we do want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including David B., Roger and Julie J., Joshua P., Cole S., and Matthew D. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So we'd love to get your feedback and hear from you. You can comment at sqpn.com/bets, that's BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And I'll put links in our discussion from our discussion in our show notes to the specifically the Naomi Novik book, so definitely check that out. Follow Raising the Bets in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or at the SQPN YouTube channel. You should make sure to hit the bell to get notifications. And until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Lori Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.